The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. We'll look at the release of the report from Special Counsel John Durham. Chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan.
They had no evidence, no probable cause, no basis whatsoever to even start this investigation.
Molly Hemingway.
This was a four-year-long undermining of the 2016 election.
As Title 42 comes to an end, Texas Senator Ted Cruz visits the border.
This is a decision that was made by President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats to open up the border to what is nothing less than an invasion.
We'll hear from Senator Cruz.
What's happening at the border is horrific. It is the worst it has ever been in the history of our nation.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at hughhewitt.com and follow me, please, on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well, at Town Hall Review. We'll begin with the release of the report from Special Counsel John Durham. In 2019, Durham began looking into the FBI and our intelligence community's actions surrounding the 2016 election. In October of 2020, then-Attorney General William Barr appointed Durham special counsel. The much-anticipated report was released on Monday this past week. I turn to Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. The bow gets knotted up 6.5 years after Team Clinton drops this and pollutes the water of 2016. Anything else to learn from this?
Well, there is a truth that justice delayed is justice denied. And as I was reading through the report, which is absolutely explosive, to have everything, yeah, it's a lot of stuff we already knew, but to have it all laid out in chronological order, or to look at how what was known at what time and therefore why the FBI mishandled things, is very informative. But it would have been great if we could have had this type of report, if more people would have fought against the Russia collusion hoax in 2016, 2017, 2018. I mean, it affected multiple elections. It was done by our own government and the Democrat Party and the media against the American people. And it's a real dark mark on American history.
It is, Molly. And what's amazing that no one's brought up yet, I just didn't want to steal your thunder if you've gotten there, it's a complete indictment of the Mueller special counsel report, because they found none of this. They had far more time. They had far more money, far more media attention. They found none of this. In fact, they couldn't even bring themselves to tell people that it was all cooked up.
Well, not just that. The whole point of the Mueller probe, supposedly, and the real point was to undermine the Trump administration, but the point was to discover how Russia had interfered in our election. That's what they claimed. Well, this Durham report shows all the ways that Russia knew about the Hillary Clinton campaign idea to come up with this lie that Donald Trump was a Russian agent, how anything that they were getting from Russian sources would have reflected that reality that Russia knew and therefore would have been Russian disinformation or misinformation, and how our FBI just played right along with it.
So we got played for 4 years, and the former president is rightly angry over getting played by Brennan Clapper and Comey in the transition meeting in Trump Tower on the first January 6, 2017. My question is, I don't think anything has changed. I don't think a word, and I like Christopher Wray. I've never met him, but I was told he's a good guy. I don't think the FBI has changed, because if it had changed, we would know what the bottom line in Hunter is. The whole deal at the FBI is slow roll everything that helps a Republican and expedite everything that hurts them. That's it. It's a partisan place.
There was this line in the Durham report where he says, we could come up with new rules and guidance to prevent this kind of abomination from happening, but it wouldn't matter unless they change the culture of the place. He says something like, until and unless the FBI begins to care about fidelity, bravery and integrity, which is what people always say the FBI stands for, then it won't matter at all. I mean, it's a brutal indictment of the culture of the FBI that goes all the way to the top, but it goes pretty far down too. If based on what we learn in this Durham investigation, it is a horrific threat to the Republic to have this powerful law enforcement agency that protects friends and allies like the Biden family. And I mean, what we're learning about from whistleblowers about the manner in which they're protecting the Biden family is extensive, and then willing to destroy democracy itself if the wrong person, according to the FBI, wins a presidential contest. I mean, it's terrifying to think about, and it's massive news. And, you know, you said you feel bad for Trump, and that you should. Everyone should, you know, everyone should have some pity here for what happened, not just to him, but to his administration, to the country itself. This was a four-year-long undermining of the 2016 election.
Now, I want to try and explain it in terms that the Beltway might understand, Molly. James Comey was to the FBI what Dan Snyder was to the Washington Redskins, now Commanders. And Dan Snyder created a culture of complete dysfunction, abuse, secrecy. Everything is off the rails. And they finally forced him. The NFL realized he's not in good for the shield. They're forcing him out. Comey was forced out. But the new owners of the Redskins, now Commanders, are going to have to change everybody in that organization, I think, top to bottom. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I think that it could happen. I mean, it would require a lot of work. It would require right now, too, not just some Republicans to care about this, but Democrats as well. But there are enough good people within the agency who are appalled by what they witnessed, appalled by what it did to the reputation of the FBI, that there's certainly more than enough to work with there.
The report was damning and it was candid. Where do things go from here? It's hard to say, but watch Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan. He's chair of the Judiciary Committee as well as the Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government. Jordan was a guest of Andrew Wilkow on the Salem News Channel.
Just give me your hot take on this.
Well, the best line in there, I think, was where Mr. Durham said the FBI failed in its fundamental mission of fidelity to the law. In other words, Andrew, they didn't follow the law. They didn't do what they had no evidence, no probable cause, no basis whatsoever, no predicate to even start this investigation. That to me was the key takeaway. And then that the idea that they got information from a truly trusted source. The trusted source said, hey, we think this is all Clinton campaign BS that they're feeding to the FBI. They dismissed that because they were so content, so focused on going after President Trump and trying to help the Clinton campaign.
I mean, there are so many things swirling around here, but it's all fake. It's all a hoax. This entire thing took 7 years, but finally we got the report that says there's no arguing. It's not Republicans versus Democrats anymore. These people lied.
Yeah, and it was all manufactured, all done for politics. I love the fact, too, that there's later in the report. I mean, the executive summary gives you the meat and the bones. But later in the report, they talk about Comey and McCabe pushing to get the FISA. Where's the FISA? When are we going to get the FISA? How long is it going to take? They're just pushing for a FISA based on this dossier. Again, the dossier that the Clinton campaign paid for, that they knew, the FBI knew was false. That was the basis for getting the FISA. And the leadership of our biggest law enforcement, the most trusted, used to be the most trusted law enforcement entity in the world, the FBI, they are pushing to get the FISA so they can start doing what? Spying on a presidential campaign, spying on American citizens. That's what they were up to. So that tells you the intensity and the politics coming from the very highest levels of the FBI.
Okay, so the big question. Okay, you chair a big subcommittee. You chair a big committee. What comes next? What do Republicans do? What does the House of Representatives do? I get it. You don't have the White House. You don't have the Senate. But what comes next?
Well, we're going to have to focus on the money. I mean, the money is always what everyone cares about. And the founders, in their wisdom, when they set up our amazing system, the best system ever, when they set it up, they wanted the Congress, the legislative branch, to have the power of the purse. I mean, if there was one branch that was, you know, more equal than the other two, it was supposed to be the legislative branch, because we control the power to tax and the power to spend. So we're going to have to look at the power to spend, that, you know, the power of the purse, and say during the appropriations process, We got to put limits on these agencies and how they spend your money, your listeners' money, the American tax dollar. We got to do that because that's really the only leverage we have. And frankly, if we don't do that, what's to stop them from doing it again? We know in 2016 that they used a Clinton campaign paid-for document, the dossier, to go spy on American citizens to try to influence election. We know in 2020, the Biden campaign, we've now learned after Mike Morrell's testimony, we now know the Biden campaign worked with Mike Morrell and 50 other former intel officials to put together a letter that was not accurate to impact the 2020 presidential election. What are they going to do in 2024 if we don't take some sort of action to limit how they use taxpayer money? So we got to continue to get the facts on the table, and then we have to look at the appropriations process.
Who would you like to subpoena? If you could have your way subpoenaing people that were involved in all of this, who would you like to bring before Congress?
Well, we've subpoenaed, I don't know how many different, up to 30 different, I think, subpoenas we've sent for individuals, documents on all kinds of things we're doing as part of our overall investigation. Relative to this specific matter, I would really like to talk to Andy McCabe again, Comey again. These were the guys who were driving it. We've had Comey and McCabe under oath in a transcribed interview back in 2019, 2020, in those time frames. But it would really be interesting to talk to them now that we know how hard they were pushing for the FISA. Now, I don't know that we'll go there. We got plenty of work we got to do to get the facts on the table, to propose legislation, and to deal with the appropriations process that I indicated. And we got a big hearing coming up this week. This week, we're having some of the FBI whistleblowers who we believe have beyond a shadow of a doubt, have been retaliated against because they came to Congress to tell us all the crazy things that are going on. So we got a big hearing this week where we're going to get some more facts on the table for the American people.
I want to know where it made the jump from potential political campaigning, which might be dirty but not illegal, into the FISA court, and what role did Hillary play in it?
Well, yeah, and they laundered it even more. You got the facts down, but think about how they tried to launder this. It was the Clinton campaign who hired the law firm Perkins Coie, who hired Fusion GPS, who hired Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele was working with the FBI some, and the FBI hired Dan Chinko, a guy who was under investigation for espionage 12 years later, but then was put on the payroll. I mean, all this was all confusing, and then, of course, information gets leaked to the press. The press reports it. They then use those press reportings, those stories, to buttress the false thing they started in the first place. That's how disgusting this all was. And the idea that it was all used to go spy on American citizens is what's really troubling. That is truly the weaponization of government being turned on we the people. And that's the part we find most egregious.
Watch Wilkow at SalemNewsChannel.com and via your Roku app. Coming up, Senator Ted Cruz visits the border.
This is a decision that was made by President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats to open up the border to what is nothing less than an invasion.
In the next segment of the Town Hall Review. Stay with us.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy celebrates our 25th anniversary year, please watch our new promotional video based on Ronald Reagan's 1976 radio address, Shaping the World for 100 Years to Come, on our Pepperdine SPP YouTube channel. And if you know someone who's thinking about graduate school this fall, we welcome applications at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. That's publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Title 42 ended over a week ago now. Title 42 refers to the pandemic-related policy that, simply put, made it easier to turn back the flow of immigrants at our southern border. The end of that policy's application means our border crisis is getting worse. Much worse. Texas Senator Ted Cruz is one of the border state leaders that senses the urgency of the time. He visited the border on the eve of the end of Title 42's enforcement.
This is a decision that was made by President Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and congressional Democrats to open up the border to what is nothing less than an invasion. Ask yourself, why is President Biden not here? Why is Kamala Harris not here? Why is Elizabeth Warren not here? Why is AOC? She still owns the white pantsuit. Why is she not here with her head buried in her hands? Because they don't give a damn about the dead bodies. 6 weeks ago, I asked Secretary Mayorkas how many migrants died in the past year crossing illegally. He said, I don't know. The number's 853.
Senator Cruz joined my colleague Todd Starnes on his podcast.
This crazy story at the border, and it's only going to get worse.
What's happening at the border is horrific. It is the worst it has ever been in the history of our nation. And it's getting worse. It's getting considerably worse. In 2.5 years since Joe Biden has been president, we've seen over 6.5 million people cross illegally into this country. It's the worst illegal immigration ever recorded in our nation's history. I was down on the border last Thursday night. Thursday night at midnight, Title 42 expired. Title 42 was the last legal authority the Biden administration was using to deport people who come here illegally. So where we are now is that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's open border policies have gotten worse. Their position is essentially anyone who comes illegally, they're going to allow to stay, and that has created an invasion at our southern border that is resulting in enormous death, enormous suffering, enormous crime, enormous disease. It is a humanitarian disaster, and it's the result of political decisions from this White House.
And quite frankly, the White House's reaction is disingenuous, I guess, at best. It's a lie at worst. They know the reason why the invasion has been slowed is because you've got the Texas National Guard down there. You've got all of the wiring and the fencing and everything going up. I mean, there are bodies there trying to stop this invasion in real time.
Well, that's exactly right. And the state of Texas has invested billions of dollars in trying to secure our southern border, and that has slowed the influx somewhat. But at the end of the day, the state of Texas is going to face real challenges stopping this invasion because it is the federal government that constitutionally has historically had the authority to deport people. And so what happens typically is when a state official apprehends someone crossing illegally, typically they hand them over to the feds, and the feds, if they were following the law, would deport them. What is making the system break down is Joe Biden is the first president in our nation's history who's just utterly refused to follow the law. And when someone who's here illegally is handed over to Joe Biden, he ignores the law, he doesn't deport them, and instead he puts them on a bus or he puts them on a plane and he sends them to every city in America. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are quite literally the last mile of the human trafficking network. Not only that, he gives them an alien identification number, a so-called A number, which makes those individuals eligible for government welfare. So he's in the business of handing government welfare to millions of people coming illegally to this country. The taxpayers are paying for it. And I'll tell you, my home state of Texas is paying the price extraordinarily. When I was in Brownsville on Thursday, we looked just across the Rio Grande River, and right on the other side of the river, there were 22,000 people camped out on the river. They had fires going. They were having cookouts. You could hear music. They were having a party because Title 42 was expiring, and all 22,000 intend to come across the entire length of the border. There are over 170,000 illegal immigrants preparing to cross right now. And this is not an unintended side effect of the Biden policies that are put in place. This is the intended effect. They want this invasion, and they want 6 million to become 10 million, to become 12 million, to become 20 million. That is their political objective. This White House is being wildly cynical. And I think we need to make the case to the voters that the misery that they are facing is a result of political decisions. If you vote for Joe Biden, you're voting for your community to be invaded. You're voting for men, women, and children to be killed in the hands of human traffickers. You're voting for women to be violently sexually assaulted, as is happening every single day. And you are voting for little children to be horribly abused by these human traffickers. And on top of all of that, you're voting for over 100,000 drug overdoses that happened last year, the highest in history. Two-thirds of that comes from Chinese fentanyl flooding across the southern border. And Todd, to put that in perspective, 100,000 deaths last year is nearly double the entire number of Americans who died in all of the Vietnam War.
Shameful.
It is shocking what Joe Biden and these policies are doing. And the Democrats intend to keep these policies in place because they look at those 6.5 million people and they see future Democrat voters. And so the death, the suffering, the sexual violence, the human slavery, all of those are necessary costs towards a partisan political objective. It is inhumane. It is perverse. It is cruel what this administration is doing.
Senator, real quick, when you look at the law, the guarantee clause does provide for the government to step in when a state has been invaded. Is that a workaround, or is that just something everybody's talking about on talk radio?
Well, look, there is ample constitutional authority to fix this problem. And to be honest, Joe Biden could wake up today and say, you know what, today I'm going to do my job. Never mind the last 2.5 years. I'm going to do it one day in office. And Joe Biden could solve this problem within a week. We know how to solve it. Under Donald Trump, we had the lowest rate of illegal immigration in 45 years. The way to solve this, which Joe Biden could do today, is number one, immediately resume building the border wall. Number two, immediately end catch and release, a disastrous policy that's caused this crisis. And number three, reinstate the incredibly successful Remain in Mexico agreement. If Biden did that, this problem would be very significantly solved. Biden doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to solve the problem. What's amazing, Todd, Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, he's not trying to stop the illegal immigration. He's not trying to stop the deaths. He's not trying to stop the sexual assaults. He's trying to have more of them. His objective is to accelerate it, to make it even more efficient. So instead of moving 6.5 million people, they can move 20 million people. And the collateral damage, they are not worried about in the slightest. It is heartbreaking watching what they are doing right now.
Look for Todd Starnes, as well as my own podcast, at Salem Podcast Network. Coming up, taking dictators seriously.
We should listen to dictators when they tell us what they intend to do.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment, please stay with us.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. I start every day by reading through the stories at Daybreak Insider. In just 10 minutes, I can zip through 10 stories that help me start my day and help shape where I go with the Mike Gallagher Show. Over 250,000 people get Daybreak Insider by email daily, and it's available to you at no cost. Go to daybreakinsider.com and simply plug in your email. That's daybreakinsider.com. In 5 minutes, you will be the most informed person in the office. That's daybreakinsider.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Jake Sullivan, National Security Advisor for President Biden, was in Vienna the week before last. He was meeting with Chinese Foreign Affairs Minister Wang Yi. Some of the messaging I heard coming out of that meeting made me wonder anew. Is this administration continuing the conciliatory approach to the CCP? I turned to Congressman Mike Gallagher, chair of the House Select Committee on Engagement with the Chinese Communist Party.
I had a lunch last week with three smart people, one of whom is a foreign national, two of whom are Democrats. All three of whom agreed that China wasn't going to attack Taiwan. They would prefer to absorb it by osmosis and take many years, and they'll just buy the island like they did Hong Kong. And I thought to myself, boy, oh boy, the left doesn't want to deal with the reality of the Chi-Coms. How do you get through to people like this that we could wake up any morning and see an invasion?
Well, let me start by paraphrasing what Churchill said at Westminster College in Fulton, Missouri, which is to say there's no doubt that the Soviet Union does not want war. They want the fruits of war, and an unimpeded expansion of their power and ideological objectives. The same is true of Xi Jinping. No doubt he would prefer to absorb Taiwan via political warfare rather than actual warfare. Yet he repeatedly is telling us that he is prepared to use force if necessary to achieve his life's ambition. And what these people need to do is pay attention to what Xi Jinping says when he talks not to the Davos crowd, but when he talks to his own party membership. And on that point, he has been crystal clear that he is prepared to use force if necessary, particularly when, as I believe will happen, he realizes that achieving that objective of reunification of Taiwan with the mainland, cannot be achieved via political warfare because the DPP is going to win the election in Taiwan in January of 2024. So if Ukraine has taught us anything, it is that we should listen to dictators when they tell us in plain language what they intend to do. And if we ignore that because we graft our own Western sensibilities onto Vladimir Putin or Xi Jinping and we do mirror imaging, we do so at our own peril. The risks of an invasion are increasing. The fact that the administration is now doubling down on an economic engagement strategy with China represents the triumph of delusion over bitter experience.
You're referring to Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, going to Vienna for 2 days of talks with Chinese counterparts, which was wildly celebrated, congratulatory. But Chairman, I have just finished the book called The Sleepwalkers by Sir Christopher Clark on the run-up, the years 1910 to 1914. I moved immediately into John Keegan's study of World War One because everything was miscalculation. Everything was a failure to pay attention to what the other sides were doing and to plot a worst-case scenario because they didn't want to think about a worst-case scenario, and they ended up with a worst-case scenario because no one spoke clearly. My colleague Dennis Prager likes to say clarity before agreement. No one speaks clearly. Xi speaks clearly. We just don't want to listen to him.
That's correct, too. Let me be clear as well. Listen, I have no problem if we want to set up what's called a crisis communication channel. I think it makes a lot of sense so that our generals can talk to their generals and there's no miscalculation that might lead to war. What I disagree with the administration on is this idea that economic engagement or cooperation on a discrete set of issues, usually they talk about climate change, or they talk about non-proliferation, or they talk about stability on the Korean Peninsula, that somehow, A, the Chinese Communist Party is going to be a productive collaborator on those issues, and B, that that cooperation will reduce tension in the overall relationship. Because if you don't deal with the main thing, which is the CCP's expanding aggression, which is particularly focused on Taiwan right now. And as I've told you many times, in some meaningful sense, the invasion of Taiwan has already begun in cyberspace and in the information space. If you don't deal with that issue, and if you're not clear about that issue, then I'm not sure how the relationship improves. Moreover, we need to remember that we are not the aggressor in this relationship. It is the CCP which is upending the status quo across the Taiwan Strait. Is the CCP which flew a spy balloon over the continental United States. And despite that, and now we have reports that the State Department tried to de-emphasize that, tried to slow roll information on that, is still precluding Congress from getting a fulsome assessment of what happened so as not to endanger these bilateral meetings. I actually think that just makes us look weak. The CCP reads that as an invitation for more aggression. It's a paradox of Marxist-Leninist regimes that the more secure they are, the more aggressive they become.
Coming up, a Southern California mom wakes up.
And now I'm an extremist because I had more than one or two kids.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
As the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy celebrates our 25th anniversary year, please watch our new promotional video based on Ronald Reagan's 1976 radio address, Shaping the World for 100 Years to Come, on our Pepperdine SPP YouTube channel. And if you know someone who's thinking about graduate school this fall, we welcome applications at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. That's publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Peachy Keenan, that's a pseudonym, was a liberal feminist growing up in Southern California. As she entered into adulthood, she began to realize, a little bit at a time, that she was being sold a bill of goods. She was being lied to. The line from the late Irving Kristol comes to mind, a conservative is a liberal who has been mugged by reality. Peachy Keenan, yes, she is writing under that pseudonym, is the author of Domestic Extremists, A Practical Guide to Winning the Culture War. Peachy Keenan was a guest of my friend Dennis Prager.
A dear friend of mine since high school said to me when we were in college or around that age, he made a great observation that I've obviously never forgotten. He said, not every intelligent person is witty, but every witty person is intelligent. It's a very, very, wow. It's a very piercing insight. Anyway, I just thought you'd get a kick out of that. But you, aside from the wittiness of it, your larger point there is we're really training to raise boys to be cowards, not men.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. And, you know, this is why I wrote my book, which I have to talk about, Domestic Extremists. Like, we are, you know, normal people like Daniel Penny, the Marine on the subway. We're kind of under attack, you know, and we're trying to figure out how to survive. How do we raise our kids? How do we, you know, make sure that they, like, keep the same gender that they were assigned at conception, you know, throughout their lives? What do we do here? They're just like, it feels like, you know, the modern culture is kind of coming at us from all angles. And, you know, how do you raise boys? They're being emasculated, you know, literally, emotionally, and spiritually, you know, being neutered by our culture where you're not allowed. You're not allowed to be a man. You're not allowed to be a straight man, you know, God forbid. And, you know, meanwhile, we're running out of people. Like, we've forgotten how to, like, keep our society going by reproducing more human beings. And that requires learning how to, you know, woo a woman and get married and have a family and, like, protect your family. And these things seem to be kind of impossible now to figure out. These very simple, ancient, you know, traditions that have kept humanity going are, like, being forgotten quickly. So that's really why I wrote my book.
Do you have children?
Yes, I have 5 children. I'm a domestic extremist, Dennis.
Yes, you are. That's right.
I'm extremely domestic.
What, did you send them to regular school or homeschool?
I did. We did a combination of both. We tried homeschooling, but for me it was difficult because, you know, I am also a working mother. I work at home, though, as a writer. And so it was hard when we had, you know, at one point we had like 3 under 3. So that was tricky to do the homeschooling. So we have, you know, we found the good schools for them that are, you know, mostly parochial schools. Because I'm also, I mean, I used to be a secular atheist and a liberal and a feminist. And now I'm this observant Catholic and a conservative. So I don't think I would really fit in well among, like, my Southern California private schools or public schools. So we take refuge.
What turned you around from your secular liberalism?
You know, yeah, I was all through my teens and college and my 20s, I was a feminist and I had no interest in getting married. I didn't, you know, I thought one day maybe I would do it. And then I started being more politically conservative, but really it was when I met my husband and realized, you know, oh, I do want to have children, and whoa, I want to have more than one, and I almost don't have enough time to put this together now. I met my husband in my very late 20s, and I mean, like I say in my book, Dennis, I escaped feminism by the skin of my teeth. You know, I barely had time to put together the size family that I wanted. And it was just really the process of getting married and realizing, like, oh, I got lied to. This is great. This is awesome. I love babies. I didn't know these things. You know, no one told me.
Anyway, I found this fascinating that you started out secular feminist and then realized, hey, wait a minute. I would actually get a great deal of meaning and joy in life from marriage and children, and that that comports more with my female nature than just career. Is that a fair summary of your evolution?
I mean, I'm just a product. You know, I grew up on the west side of L.A. You know, I went to what would be considered like, quote, elite private schools and universities and stuff. And so I was just raised by the culture, and my all my peers, we were all the same. We had totally believed all the lies of feminism that, you know, the main goal in life was to have fun, spend your 20s having fun and avoid pregnancy at all costs. You know, God forbid you would like get pregnant and have a baby. Like, no, no. And that was just something that, you know, old people did, like nerds did that. Like, we're going to have fun, be cool. And by the time I figured it out, you know, I met the right man, and my very good fortune, he was already had been red-pilled. Like, he was already a conservative. I was not there yet. You know, when you fall in love with someone, it's like, wow, they can like influence you in certain ways. And so I figured it out in time to have a baby. And I loved that. I loved this guy. No one had told me this, and I wanted to have as many as I could, basically, in the time I had left, you know, before the clock ran out.
When I see what the anti-religious believe and produce, I realize there is no alternative to a religious outlook on life. So Domestic Extremist, A Practical Guide to Winning the Culture War. You have a guide to winning the culture war?
I sure do.
Give me an example. Give me an example of a suggestion.
You know, when I say domestic extremists, obviously I don't mean, you know, the bad kind. What I mean is someone who's simply living a more domestic life, choosing the domestically extreme lifestyle. And what that means is that you need to reject feminism. And that's one of the tips. And like, I go through a whole thing of how women can see through the lies of feminism, everything from the abortion industrial complex, rejecting the dating industry, getting off Tinder, focusing on the things that are really your best hope, putting together a happy, stable life long term. Taking a million different antidepressants is not going to do it for you. But you need to have children and get married and try to stay married. And these are things that were considered totally normal, you know, within recent memory. And now I'm an extremist because I had more than, you know, one or two kids. And because I choose to stay married and be in a monogamous mating pair, you know, with my husband, I'm considered an extremist. And, you know, we go to mass. And these are all these things that make me very dangerous, ironically, to the ruling class, to the regime, because, you know, I'm raising my children with our rules and not theirs.
Coming up,
the brainwashing you got from K-12 college is where they're going to finalize that project and spit you out, and you're going to hate your country, and you're not going to know what gender you are.
A few more minutes with Peachy Keenan in the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Stay with us.
It is critical we keep AM radio in all cars and all trucks. Hey, Sean Hannity here. More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio. It is the backbone of the emergency alert system, and that keeps us safe in dangerous times, because when cell and internet services are down, AM radio might be your only lifeline. Now text AM to the number 52886. Tell Congress that we need AM radio in our cars. Text AM to 52886. 86 today.
We don't need no education.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Educational choices for today's parents are tough. The need for wisdom and discernment about the impact of what our kids are getting exposed to starts early. And of course, the choice of a university is particularly critical. Here again, Dennis Prager with Peachy Keenan, author of Domestic Extremists.
How old is your oldest?
He'll be 18 soon, so it's a very scary time for me as a mother.
That's right, because is he going to go to college?
It's really weird, because I was raised, you know, to be very meritocratic, go to the best school you can get into, go Ivy League. You know, all those schools are basically just all crossed off the list. And every time I look at the news, oh, I've got to cross that school.
That's correct. That is correct.
Oh, that school has
one is worse than the next.
Right. So my list is very, very short right now. Catholic colleges, maybe some local schools, we'll see. But the other problem is that due to, you know, things that we can't control, certain, you know, demographic characteristics of my son, he won't even get in to schools like, you know, that were considered kind of safety schools for me, like the UC schools. He doesn't have a shot.
Because he's white male?
Yeah, white, straight, Christian male. Like, okay, forget it. Sorry. So we have to come up with some other solutions. I mean, you know, we can't all go to Hillsdale. I mean, I wish we all could, maybe, but it's really tough.
That's right. That's why I asked you the question. I was curious how you would resolve it. It's very tough. It's very tough to be a parent today. But look, I mean, there are, I believe, millions upon millions of adult children who don't speak to a parent because college taught them that if their parent votes Republican, they're despicable. And they've bought it, and then they've severed relations with that parent.
Yeah, I mean, most colleges, most mainstream colleges are now just finishing academies for the left. To finish, just, you know, finish you off, whatever they did to you, the brainwashing you got from K to 12, college is where they're going to finalize that project and spit you out. And you're going to, you know, hate your parents, and you're going to hate your country, and you're not going to know what gender you are. And that's, you're just a perfect, you know, part of the, you know, the leftist army now, and you're just an activist. And, you know, children are things to be aborted or avoided. And we're not really good at creating future parents anymore. We're like not doing that. And that's why I wrote Domestic Extremists, because we have to get more people to be more domestic, like, fast. We don't have a lot of time here to waste, you know, on on things like discovering your new Baroque genders that don't exist.
Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. If you benefited from what we're doing, please mention this to your friends. Go to townhallreview.com to sign up for our podcast. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Shubin and producers David Pouchon, Jacob Orduña, Tim Gantner, Adam Ramsey, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us for Town Hall Review.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.